deadlines this hour. The EU foreign policy chief says the Vienna talks on the revival of the Iran nuclear deal are intense and slow, and there's still a lot of work to be done. The UK says it's keeping all options on the table in tackling a post-Brexit trade row with the European Union over Northern Ireland. Also coming up, thousands of striking workers gather outside the Greek Parliament in Athens to protest against a controversial Labour bill. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, the European Union's foreign policy chief says talks to revive the 2015 Iran nuclear deal are intense and slow. Josep Borrell said the EU is working on what he calls a non-stop basis to revive the accord in all its aspects. His comments come as the remaining signatories to the international agreement are set to meet in the Austrian capital, Vienna, on Saturday for the sixth round of talks. According to the diplomats participating in the talks, disagreements persist about a few key issues. The negotiations are being held on a possible US return to the deal, also known as the JCPOA, and the complete removal of sanctions against Iran. Now, author and journalist Daniel Lazar says the US is reluctant to come back to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal and remove anti-Tehran sanctions.
Well, I've always been very pessimistic about the prospect of the U.S. re-entering the JCPOA. The U.S., the Congress is dominated by anti-Iran hardliners, and the administration is on tacking on extra to the JCPOA, and it's extremely reluctant to remove anti-Iran sanctions. So for that reason, I think I doubt the talks will go anywhere very soon. They really don't want an agreement. They want to push for the economic strangulation of Iran, a rollback of Iranian power, and a further tipping of the balance of power in the Middle East towards Saudi Arabia and especially towards Israel. The U.S. has been firm on this issue. It was firm under the Trump administration, and now with the stance is equally hard on the Biden administration.
Iran's ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency has slammed the organization for its, quote, counterproductive approach towards Tehran, warning that the agency has become a political body. Kazem Gharibabadi said the agency's latest report on Iran was not based on reliable sources and therefore is not valid. The agency reported last week that Iran failed to explain traces of uranium found at several undeclared sites. The Iranian envoy said the IAEA report could hamper Tehran's future relations with the UN body. He added that Iran has carried out its safeguards commitments, noting that there is no diversion in the country's nuclear activities. Gharibabadi also blasted the IAEA for not speaking out against Israel's nuclear weapons, saying the agency's silence against the regime's acts of sabotage puts its impartiality under question. Our political commentator Tony Gosling says it is hypocritical on the part of the IAEA to keep mum about Israel's nuclear stockpile and at the same time question Iran's cooperation with the body.
Well, I think there's an incredible hypocrisy at the heart of this story, and that is to do with the Israeli nuclear stockpile. In the International Atomic Energy Authority say that the Iranians have failed to explain about some nuclear material which is being used for peaceful purposes. Well, it lets wonder if what would happen if the IAEA did an inspection of Israel and had a look at the atomic weapons that they've got primed and ready to go, although they deny to the world population that they've even got these weapons, or they neither confirm nor deny. And the reason they do that is because if they were to admit they had nuclear weapons, then this would go against the law, the funding laws of the billions of dollars that they get from the United States. And so according to US law, that funding would have to cease. So we have a really fundamental error at the beginning and the start and the base of this story, which is that those inspectors should be crawling all over the Israelis who are talking about war. They actually seem to be trying to even foment something through their appalling treatment of, through diplomatic circles and through their domestic population of Arabs and Muslims generally.
Elsewhere, with almost 1 week to Iran's 13th presidential election, people are weighing up different candidates for the country's top executive post. The contenders are also hard at work to galvanize their base and secure more votes to take the office for the next 4 years. Let's cross over to our election studio to find out more about the latest developments.
Welcome to another edition of Election Special. Thank you for joining us. Presidential candidate Amir Hossein Qazizadeh Hashemi has briefly outlined his plans for different provinces in the country. He says each city needs to be able to offer services similar to those being offered in the capital. Qazizadeh also made some comments regarding diplomacy, saying the foreign policy must be mainly focused on the economy.
It is very important for the governments to have plans for each province, aside from those for the country as a whole. My government's provincial plans include assigning greater responsibilities to local governors. We have a model based on which all of our cities will be similar to Tehran, and therefore people would not need to travel to the capital for particular services. We also want diplomacy for the economy and nothing else. The foreign ministry is most valuable to us when it manages to pave the way for economic exchanges with other countries.
Presidential candidate Saeed Jalili says if elected president, he will provide the necessary budget to resolve problems surrounding Iran's education system. Jalili is critical of the current administration for failing to provide necessary facilities to hard-up areas in the country's south. The 55-year-old candidate called for what he called cultural diplomacy, adding that necessary privileges have to be granted to minorities across the country to fill the gap between ethnic groups. With regard to foreign policy, Jalili says the next president has to have a good knowledge of the region and the world. Here's more.
The one who becomes president has to know the region and the world, as well as ties between countries. Making a mistake will put you on a wrong track. In the Muslim world, we have various capabilities for which there should be a different plan and approach on different levels. This policy differs depending on which governments, which political ideological currents, or what nations you're dealing with. Each of them needs a specific agenda for you to be able to deal with.
Let's move on to the next presidential candidate. Mohsen Rezaei has vowed to bring about real change to the current economic and foreign policies if he gets elected to the office. In an interview on Thursday, he criticized the current banking system in Iran and promised to conduct major reforms. Let's take a listen.
One of the first things that I will do as a president will be reforming our banking system. We will make the central bank of Iran independent from the government. Our banks do not follow international standards. Our banking system is very traditional. Even if FATF is approved, no foreign banks are willing to do transactions with Iranian banks because they believe it is very risky. This is because our banks lack international standards. The other issue is the ranking of customers, which is very important for getting loans. Also, the procedure that only one bank could give housing loans is totally unacceptable.
Now let's move on to the next presidential candidate that I'm going to talk about now, Ebrahim Raisi. He says he has set an agenda for securing the removal of anti-Iran sanctions. He highlighted the need for strengthening Iran's economy in the face of sanctions or any other trauma that might afflict the country's economy. Here's more.
The Iranian nation should do all in its power to confront those who seek to breach the Iranian nation's rights and pursue the removal of sanctions. Definitely, action should be taken to bring about the removal of the sanctions, and the strategy to do so is already there. Iran's economy should be built in a way that neither sanctions nor any other shocks from the coronavirus to flooding and other incidents can shake it.
Next, presidential candidate Alireza Zakani has outlined his economic plan in an interview. He says supporting the low-income deciles of society and single mothers is his top priority. Zakani says he will also tackle unemployment and pay cash handouts to the unemployed to help families make ends meet. Let's take a listen.
In my government, 25 million low-income Iranians will receive free medical care, and the low-income deciles of society will not have to pay for treatment. My government will also provide subsidy cards to 69 million Iranians to help them make ends meet. The future government of the country must create conditions for the maximum welfare of the people. There are currently 3,500,000 single mothers in the country, and supporting them is one of my top priorities. There are 2.5 million unemployed people in the country. My government, while creating suitable conditions for training job skills to these people, will also pay a monthly allowance of 1.2 million tomans to unemployed people.
As election day approaches in Iran, presidential candidates intensify their campaigns so that they can woo more voters. This year, most of the campaigns are conducted and aired on state media in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, but candidates are allowed to hold physical electoral campaigns with limited numbers. Youssef Jalali reports.
The June 18th presidential vote draws to a close in Iran, and candidates are on a tight schedule, trying to make the best of the remaining time to attract more public support. In addition to televised campaigns, candidates now visit universities and other key places to increase their popularity among people from different walks of life.
When I make a promise, I'll give you a clear roadmap that shows every step of my plan. For example, if I promise to solve the issue of housing, I will give you the exact timeline of the procedure and the number of houses that I will build for the people who don't have a house.
We try to analyze the current state of affairs in Iran and create plans that are based on real circumstances of our society. We concluded that we could make tangible changes based on our plans.
All of the seven contenders have rich executive backgrounds, from sitting atop the judicial branch to running the Central Bank of Iran. But perhaps their past plays the least part in winning the race, since it's what they plan for the future that matters to voters.
I have a special plans regarding the exchange market. I believe that the capital market plays a significant role in financing the country's industries.
If I took office, I would eliminate the coronavirus once and for all within less than 6 months. I also have comprehensive health policies that would reduce the costs significantly for patients.
We do have plans, but we cannot break them down to their details during a limited time of campaigns. God willing, if I'm elected president, I will operate those plans.
Aside from electoral campaigns, which are mostly held in the form of televised addresses, the candidates face off in live debates. So far, the seven runners have attended two televised debates. The first was themed with economy, and the second centered on social affairs. The third and final showdown is slated for June 12th.
Unlike previous rounds where the elections were more of a clash of the parties, this time it's a race of plans. Plans that can ensure a better economy and a brighter future for Iranians. Youssef Jalali, Tehran.
The election fever is beginning to run high in the country. This as the candidates are set to take part in the third and final presidential debate on June the 12th. They, like the previous debates, will answer questions in a three-hour session to outline their plans in an effort to woo voters. Well, that's a wrap for now. Thanks for tuning in.
Turning to other news now, Britain says it keeps all options on the table in dealing with a post-Brexit trade row with the European Union over Northern Ireland. A spokesman for Prime Minister Boris Johnson said time is running out to find a way through. Britain is demanding flexibility from the European Union over Northern Ireland. But the bloc is angry at the UK over what it sees as unilateral actions. The row has threatened the 1998 peace deal between the UK and Northern Ireland that ended 3 decades of bloodshed. US President Joe Biden, who is in Britain, has expressed concerns over the dispute, with the White House noting the president has rock-solid belief in the peace deal. Elsewhere, thousands of protesters have gathered outside the Greek parliament in the capital, Athens, to voice their anger at a controversial Labour bill. The demonstration was spearheaded by the country's largest trade unions. It was part of a 24-hour strike against the proposed reforms. The industrial action caused heavy traffic and disruption to public transport in the city. The protesters believe the government is seeking to change the 8-hour, 5-day working week. They believe the matter would allow employers to force workers to accept longer hours and, at the same time, refuse to pay overtime. The bill would also put restrictions on joining strikes. The proposed legislation is being debated on the parliament floor and is expected to pass next week. Right, well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
New data released on Monday, June 7th, showed atmospheric carbon dioxide reached a monthly average level of 419 parts per million in May, which is not only the maximum reading ever recorded since accurate measurements began 63 years ago, but also the highest level the planet has experienced in over 4 million years. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Brett Wilkins Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Atmospheric Carbon Dioxide Hits Highest Level in Over 4 Million Years. Here's the details. New data released on Monday, June 7th, showed atmospheric carbon dioxide reached a monthly average level of 419 parts per million in May, which is not only the maximum reading ever recorded since accurate measurements began 63 years ago, but also the highest level the planet has experienced in over 4 million years. Scientists from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and Scripps Institute of Oceanography at the University of California, San Diego, working at NOAA's Mauna Loa Atmospheric Baseline Observatory in Hawaii, said the May measurements, an increase from 417 parts per million in May 2020, mean that the atmospheric burden of CO2 is now comparable to where it was during the Paleocene climatic optimum between 4.1 and 4.5 million years ago, when CO2 was close to or above 400 ppm. During that time, sea level was about 78 feet higher than today. The average temperature was 7 degrees Fahrenheit higher than in pre-industrial times, and studies indicate large forest-occupied areas of the Arctic that are now tundra, they said. The scientists noted that while the worldwide economic slowdown during the coronavirus pandemic led to a significant but temporary decrease in global greenhouse gas emissions, the drop had no discernible impact on the rate of atmospheric CO2 accumulation. As Common Dreams reported recently, atmospheric CO2 concentrations surged past 420 ppm for the first time in recorded history in April. Ralph Keeling, the geochemist in charge of Scripps Mauna Loa program, said that the ultimate control knob on atmospheric CO2 is fossil fuel emissions, and that we still have a long way to go to halt the rise as each year more CO2 piles up in the atmosphere. We ultimately need cuts that are much larger and sustained longer than the COVID-related shutdowns of 2020, he added. Peter Tenz, a senior scientist at NOAA's Global Monitoring Lab, noted that CO2 is stored in the Earth's oceans and atmosphere for thousands of years after it is emitted. We are adding roughly 40 billion metric tons of CO2 pollution to the atmosphere per year, Tenz said in a statement announcing the new figures. That is a mountain of carbon that we dig up out of the earth, burn, and release into the atmosphere as CO2, year after year. If we want to avoid catastrophic climate change, the highest priority must be to reduce CO2 pollution to zero at the highest possible date, stressed Tenz. Such a reduction would require a dramatic shift in human activity. especially by the world's wealthiest 1%, who, according to a September 2020 study by Oxfam, emit more than twice as much CO2 as the poorest 50% of humanity. The solution is right before our eyes, said Tense. Solar energy and wind are already cheaper than fossil fuels, and they work at the scales that are required. If we take real action soon, we might still be able to avoid catastrophic climate change. The new figures come as world leaders and policy makers prepare for the upcoming United Nations Climate Change Conference, also known as COP26, which will be held in Glasgow, Scotland this November.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is the state of the world prophesied by Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, in the end days when the Prophet's last and 12th successor reappears to fill the world with justice. When the advent of our Qa'im, the executor, will fall, the heavens will cause its drops to descend, the lands will grow its plants, the malice will disappear from the hearts of the servants, and animals and beasts will be harmless in such a way that a woman will walk from Iraq to Syria, putting the basket on the head and treading only on green lands, without fearing or being troubled by a beast.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily around the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Lovely listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's episode of Muslim Lady. We're proud to bring you this show only on IRB English Radio and, of course, in the studio as always. And, of course, in the studio, as always, I have my special guest and darling sister, Sister Razia Shamili. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Dear Zainab, happy to be here.
I'm totally excited to have you with us again so we can continue our active discussion. On the previous episode of Muslim Lady, I had the honor of discussing certain important, significant, and life-rendering issues with Sister Razia Shamili. We are talking about the spiritual aspect that we need to take into consideration before having a baby, both the dude and the dudette, the mom and the dad, the lady and the gentleman. And up till now, Sister Razia, you mentioned a few points, being familiar with the Quran, prayer, the importance of prayer, adhkar, there's a specific dhikr, I think Ya Nur al-Nur, if I'm not mistaken.
Wudu all the time.
Yes, having wudu and ablution all the time. And finally, it was repenting.
Right.
Repenting from what, how, and why?
Repenting of all the sins that you have done, consciously and unconsciously.
But don't we do that regularly anyway?
No, many people don't.
What?
They're not even aware. They're like, they're so immersed and submerged in their daily life issues that they're like, they're just thinking about like doing this business, buying this car, going to, you know, doing things done that they don't care about. You know, actually, the birth of a child or the conception of a child or the new chapter of the introduction of a child to a family sometimes changes people because sometimes they realize the great impact that they can have, you know, on the next generations to come. And sometimes people make great changes in their life because of this realization. And as a matter of fact, someone who couldn't have a child came to one of the infallibles and he said that, well, I really want to have a child, but I can't. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doesn't grant me a child. And you know the remedy for this?
What?
Constant istighfar. Seriously, for people, actually, one of the medicines, one of the cures for infertility is constant istighfar.
One of the cures to everything nowadays, exactly. When you really think about it. Because, like, we went mentioned on one of the segments, you said, bima kasabat aydihim, right? Whatever calamity and hardship befalls us is because what we've done to ourselves. So if I'm suffering from financial problems, mental problems, physical problems, spousal problems, relationship problems, problems, chances are I kind of caused it for myself through a chapter and period of my life, an estate of ignorance, negligence. And this could be a wake-up call for me. So if I do istighfar for, like, da'a kumail, it's been said that if you want more provisions, read da'a kumail. You want to be forgiven? Da'a kumail. You want to have a vast grave? Da'a kumail. You want to have a good afterlife? Da'a kumail. Because it's such a comprehensive, all-encompassing prescription. Because I messed myself up.
Wow. Exactly. And da'a kumail is a process of self-repentance, right?
Yeah.
And to go come back to yourself and say that I have wronged myself. Mm-hmm. I've done injustice to myself. Right. And I am back again.
Mm-hmm.
We've mentioned this before. Another act to be done, preconception, is fasting. Mm-hmm. At least 2 or 3 times a week to fast. And that's why we said if we start from Rajab, Shaban, and Ramadan, you're automatically, you know, it's so recommended to fast. It's great to do that. Of course, it's for detoxification of the body and detoxication of the soul.
MashaAllah.
Right. When to conceive? A lot of people have this question that actually there are specific times, even for when you want to get married and for the recital of the khutbah of Aqd, or for this contract to be recited. There are specific times that are recommended to do it and specific times that are you have to avoid. And we don't know the full reason for them, but because of these very small, insignificant factors that exist in the universe, in the world, and because they do
seemingly insignificant.
Yeah, and because we, you know, might not even be aware of. So there are certain times that, according to ahadith, they are recommended for conception, and sometimes they are to be avoided and they are makruh. You know, when you have tide because of the moon, the impact of the moon on the sea?
Yeah.
See, that's like very evident.
Yeah, and like 70% of our body is made out of water, so.
Exactly. So
it's bound to affect us some way.
It makes sense, right? Of course, these are to be regarded and to be observed when you want to conceive. Other than this, like if you just, some people would say, well, it makes it really difficult every time we want to have relationship, then we have to like observe it. These are for conception, you know,
right.
For that time. And okay, let us talk about the times. So the first night of the month of Ramadan is amongst the time that is recommended. Amongst the other recommended times are Sunday night, eve of Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then again, Thursday afternoon and Thursday night.
Right.
These are among the recommended times. Friday are again among the
entirety of Friday?
Yeah.
It's a holiday.
Well, of course, certain times at sunrise, sunset thing, there is also
exceptions.
Yeah. And there are reasons. According to our hadith, for example, it says that if you conceive on the eve of Monday or Sunday night, it will help your child to have a good memory. Right? So there are like, or that child will be content with life.
Interesting.
Right. Or if you conceive Thursday night or eve of Friday, Allah willing, you will have an orator, talented, skilled, or your child will be a talented, skilled orator. Okay, other nights, there are some nights to be avoided. Number one, from sunset till Maghrib.
Okay.
Two, during frightful natural occurrences, like there's a wind or like earthquake or, you know, at those times. Number three, from dawn till sunrise.
Yeah.
That's like a short time.
Yeah,
couple of
exactly.
Minutes,
and
right?
You're supposed to spend it supplicating to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala anyway.
But it's after Namaz al-Subh. You can't pray Namaz al-Subh at this time. Right?
Yeah,
because
you pray your salah, and then you're doing your taqibat.
Or you're just sleeping.
Exactly.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Number four, the last 3 nights of the lunar month.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically 27th, 28th, 29th, or 28th, 29th, 30th.
Exactly.
Right.
The fifth one, eve of the 15th of every lunar month.
Eve of the 15th of every lunar month. Got
right.
It.
And then number six, eve of the 10th of Dhul Hajjah.
Eve of the 10th of Dhul Hijjah is among the times that you should not be making babies.
Right. Number seven, after becoming junub.
Right.
After you've already had a sexual relationship. And you haven't done the ablution.
Uh-huh. Go purify yourself
and
first.
Then,
and,
yes,
because it kind of defeats the objective.
Exactly. At the time of solar eclipse.
We already talked about that, like natural scary natural events.
Right, or lunar eclipse.
Right.
So these are times to be avoided for conception. And, okay, so let's say that it is, now you've chosen the day and the time, and then, see, everything has to go according to the plan. You say, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
You make ablution before you start.
Right. And, of course, the environment of your bedroom has to be in a way that you have peace, the colors that you choose, the pictures that you have on the walls, the movie that you have seen before, the sound that you have heard prior to that, it will influence the child. Have some fresh flowers. You can light some candles.
These are important, it a little.
Right? So the scent, the aroma that you have in your room, these are very important. Like it's like saffron, musk, or Indian incense. These are like very natural aromas that you can have in your bedroom. The lighting, the colors we mentioned, everything. It's important that. Like, you've had a big fight with your wife or your husband. You're both angry.
Right.
And stressed out.
So please don't have a baby then.
Exactly. Because your peace of mind.
Exactly. You're going to have a stressed out baby.
Exactly. And that baby will not look like you. So, it's very important that parents have a strong, urgent desire for each other. The temptation is very important here in the health and in the beauty of the baby.
MashaAllah.
Right? And so sometimes some people say that wait for your menstrual cycle of your wife to finish.
Of course.
And a couple of days that she's most fertile. And, you know, of course, you haven't had relationship for like a week or so. So the urge is there.
Yeah.
The body is ready. Have the relationship at that time, especially because the sperms have also rested for some time. They're strong. They're healthy. They're active. And it will, these are.
Inshallah, you'll be successful.
Inshallah, you'll be successful. Oh, and things to avoid.
Right.
Do not talk while you're conceiving. Other than the dhikr of God. Other children should not be observing you, should not be hearing your voice. Very important. Try not to face the qibla. Not to face the qibla. Not for the qibla to be behind you. Try not to be one hand, like be naked from head to toe. Have some covering. Try to be under the blanket. Not to conceive with a full stomach.
Interesting.
Very important. Not to conceive the day that you want to go on a trip.
Stress.
Or the day that you've come back.
Lethargy.
Exactly. Not to conceive next to a fruit tree.
I think it has something to do with like carbon dioxide or something.
I don't know. Not to conceive under direct sunlight. While you want to conceive, there's a beautiful, beautiful prayer from Imam Baqir alayhi salam that says, read this prayer, Allahumma arzuqni waladan waj'alhu taqiyan zakiyan laysa fi khalqihi ziyada wala nuqsan waj'al aqibatahu ila khair.
Oh Allah, grant me a
child
who is pure and
taqiyan zakiyan,
pure and pious. Clean and pious.
Laysa fi khalqihi ziyada wala nuqsan.
He does not have any deficiencies or any extremities in his body.
Right. And waj'al aqibatahu ila khair.
No deficiencies and no extra facts in his body, and may his fate and his end be upon goodness and wellness.
Mindfulness. This is just mindfulness.
Exactly. You know what you want, you ask from it, and then you intentionally strive in life to achieve it. That's all the time we have for today's episode of Muslim Lady. Thank you so much, Sister Razian, to our listeners for being with us. Until another greeting and salam, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free. I wish that somehow you tell me out aloud.
Wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Australian scientists have discovered one of the world's largest ever dinosaur species in the Eromanga area in outback Queensland. Research shows the plant-eating sauropod lived between 92 million and 96 million years ago when Australia was attached to Antarctica. Paleontologists estimated the dinosaur was as long as a basketball court and as tall as a two-story building. That makes it the largest dinosaur ever found in Australia and one of the top five largest ones in the world. Bones of the dinosaur were first uncovered more than a decade ago by cattle farmers. Iranian capital Tehran has hosted a festival of cake sculptors. The event showcases delicious sweets that are carved into eye-catching sculptures. Yusuf Jalali has more.
It's not a piece of cake to bake a sculpture, but pastry chefs here have made it. In the fourth festival of cake sculptures in Iran, sugarcraft artists from across the country have come under one roof in Tehran to cast their spell on these sweets and carve a wide range of fascinating 3D figures out of them. From this tasty coronavirus to this beautiful angel that is picking up the only eatable trash in the world.
Here you can see this angel, which represents the innocent heart of labor children, collecting pieces of trash that contain some of the simplest dreams of a labor child, such as quality food, books, and toys.
My cake is made based on what we call installation art. I have put together iconic structures and monuments of Iran. But when you take a look at them from a special angle, you can see Iran's map.
Some of the cake sculptures here have really pushed the envelope of the art of sculpting, like this bust that shows the 13th century Persian poet Rumi, surrounded with a heavenly garden that's decorated with intricate and mind-boggling details. It took its creator almost a month to finish it.
In the middle, I have put the bust of Rumi, who we refer to as Maulana in Iran. He's holding his most significant verse work, Masnavi Manavi. The garden I created around him and the birds here all are inspired by his poems.
Organizers say they hold the festival every year to modernize the confectionery industry and combine it with fine arts to make it more appealing to the public.
500 works are showcased here in four sections. Bust cakes, wedding cakes, cookie cakes, which are made using royal icing, and the fourth section is cream cakes. The major goal is to scout for talents who can revolutionize the confectionery industry.
Some of the participants in the festival are pastry chefs who try to make their cakes look better. And others are actually pro sculptors who want to bake a figure instead of carving it. Perhaps it's easy to tell who is who by taking a glimpse at their cakes. But sweets will win the competition. They're both delicious and delicate.
It takes ultimate care and a knack for both bakery and artistry to be able to transform sweets into statues. In fact, they're both so spectacular and yummy that make you want to have the cake and eat it too. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Nowadays, phone addiction is causing an increasing number of accidents worldwide. A Korean engineer has come up with a creative, although satirical, way to tackle that issue. Pang Min-wook is a 28-year-old industrial engineer or designer. He has invented a robotic eyeball people can wear to avoid accidents when using their phones while walking. The device is strapped to the forehead and opens its eyelids when the users lower their heads. The third eye then beeps in warning when the user comes within 1 or 2 meters of an obstacle. Pang says his device is not a solution to the issue and hopes that people will understand the severity of their reliance on gadgets when they see their third eye.
As the coronavirus continues to wreak havoc in India, some auto rickshaw drivers have turned their three-wheelers into makeshift ambulances to provide patients with first aid services.
Those are patients.
In New Delhi, the municipal ambulances are often occupied. There are also some very narrow alleys or built-up areas that are inaccessible by regular-sized ambulances. In these cases, our makeshift ambulances came in handy then. We attend to people in need with oxygen cylinders.
Mishra, who started the Rickshaw Ambulance Initiative, says his center attends around 1,200 calls per day. He says rickshaw volunteers transport roughly 150 patients during peak hours. The brave drivers work 12-hour shifts and mainly serve people with mild symptoms. They wear full protective gear, including face shields, while on duty. The three-wheeler ambulances are easily identifiable by the large printed image of the fleet and emergency call numbers. Mishra says the fleet will continue running with all its might until the coronavirus is under full control in India. In Russia, drone enthusiasts have gathered in the capital, Moscow, to show off their technological creativity in a racing competition. The participants created their own drones and made changes to the models right on the site where the competition was held to improve their chances to win the contest. The goal was for the participants to complete the track in the shortest possible time. Participants say the interesting thing about the competition is that it's cheaper than other games.
It's a lot of fun. From the outside, it may not be so clear, but when you're inside it, it becomes really fun to talk, race with the competitors, learn from their experience, some new technological things. As for the high cost, it is expensive, but when compared with the snowboards and skis, it is really cheaper, but more expensive than knitting.
In 2017, the International Federation of Aeronautics, or FAI, announced drone racing as an official sport. In 2018, Russia's sports ministry included drone racing in all Russian register of sports with a class code F3U following the FAI classification.
A science professor has released spectacular drone footage of lava streaming from an Icelandic volcano. Sørensen Johnson flew a drone over the volcano 2 months after it started erupting. He captured close-up shots of lava bubbling in its crater in the southwest of Iceland's capital, The volcanologists say that they have no idea how long this eruption will continue, adding that magma could flow for years. Iceland is home to dozens of active volcanoes. Volcanic landscapes have turned into a tourist attraction in the Scandinavian country.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Two Russian cosmonauts have conducted spacewalk outside the International Space Station to prepare an old docking module for disposal. The duo spent more than 7 hours outside the ISS to wrap up preparations for the eventual disposal of the Pris docking compartment. According to NASA officials, the Russian cargo freighter will remove the two-decade-old module from the orbiting laboratory later this summer. Both the cargo ship and a press will burn up in the atmosphere above the Pacific Ocean. The orbiting press will clear the way for the arrival of a new Russian multipurpose laboratory module named Nuka, meaning science in Russian. Nuka is scheduled to launch on July the 15th this year. Wednesday's operation was the sixth spacewalk in 2021 in support of the Space Station Assembly, maintenance, and upgrades.
A rare albino baby elephant that was rescued from poachers in South Africa has found a new home with a welcoming herd. The calf, named Han Yisa, was caught in a snare in the Kruger National Park when she was only 4 months old. She suffered several nasty wounds, including one to her mouth. Han Yisa remained trapped in the snare for 4 days before being rescued and taken to a shelter especially built for elephants northeast of Johannesburg. All the other elephants there are orphans too.
Each female that we had has a baby. So except for them, all of the others are orphaned. And I think that is part of the reason why they accept these orphans, because they know how it feels, you know, and they become actually, you know, the mother figures for them.
The calf has learned to adapt to the new life. She lies under the shadow cast by bigger elephants to protect herself from getting sunburned. The shelter says if the herd grows too big for the area, she and other elephants will be released into the wild. A Brazilian artist has found a way to reuse plastic bags in a very creative way, making something beautiful out of them. Eduardo Sroa turns recycled shreds of plastic into real pieces of artwork. He picks up the material from city streets and rivers. Without using a drop of paint, Sroa recreates paintings by Picasso, Van Gogh, and other famous artists. He says his goal is to draw attention to plastic pollution.
I present this series as a product that does not have paint, except for what has already been processed into plastic by the industry. It does not have glue. It is a box that was built, and inside I press and condense it. I make an accumulated cluster of plastic bags that ends up creating this image that you see.
Sura's exhibition is due to open in Sao Paulo in the coming months. His previous works were also aimed at raising awareness about the environment. He has created several giant installations in public places, mostly along polluted rivers.
Chinese archaeologists have unearthed a rare 3,000-year-old bronze figure from a site they have been excavating for months in Sichuan province. The 1.5-meter figure deemed one of China's most famous archaeological discoveries. It consists of two parts. The upper part is 55 centimeters high,